Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a really fascinating and surprisingly short piece of ancient wisdom. It's just a small passage, but it asks some huge questions about where we stand. Our mission really is to pull out the key insights from this text and see how they connect to our lives right now, how they can help us, you know, understand things better and maybe deepen our faith.
That's exactly right. We're looking at Job chapter 25 today. It's only 6 verses long. It's a speech from Bildad the Shuhite, you know, one of Job's friends who came to comfort him, or try to. But yeah, don't let the length fool you. It definitely packs a theological punch, and it really zeroes in on a fundamental question about humanity and God that frankly still resonates big time.
Okay, right. Let's get into it then. So Bildad is talking to Job, who's obviously going through immense suffering. What's Bildad actually saying in these 6 verses? What's his main point?
Well, Bildad is essentially circling back to an argument his friends have made before. He's painting this incredibly grand picture of God's power and contrasting it with human impurity. He kicks off by talking about God's absolute rule, his dominion and fear, saying he establishes peace up in the heavens. It's all about total control, cosmic order. He asks, you know, rhetorically, is there any number to his armies? And upon whom does his light not arise? The implication being God's power is just limitless everywhere.
So starting with that massive scale, that sort of overwhelming majesty of God, setting that scene first.
Precisely, yeah. And then from that high point, Bildad pivots right to his core question. Yeah. It's a question that echoes really through so much religious thought. If God is that powerful, that pure, how could any human possibly measure up? He asks it directly. How then can man be justified with God? Or how can he be clean that is born of a woman?
Wow. That's a very blunt question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He's basically saying, how can anyone be considered righteous or acceptable by God? Doesn't leave much room for human effort, it sounds like.
No, it really doesn't. And to drive the point home, Bildad uses some incredibly stark imagery. It's almost jarring, really. He points up to the sky, to the moon and stars, and says, look, even the moon isn't bright, and the stars aren't pure in his sight. His logic is, okay, if these celestial bodies, these huge, seemingly perfect things, aren't pure enough for God. Then he asks, how much less man who is a maggot and the son of man who is a worm?
A worm. A maggot. That's, wow. That is incredibly vivid language and pretty harsh, honestly. It really hammers home that idea of just how small and insignificant humans are compared to this immense God. It makes you feel
tiny.
Yeah, tiny. But what's really interesting here, as you pointed out, is that Job, he doesn't actually answer Bildad this time. He just stays silent. Why do you think that is? What's going on there?
Yeah, that silence is... It's really telling, isn't it? Part of it might just be, well, fatigue. Bildad's argument isn't entirely new. It echoes what Eliphaz and Zophar have already said. Job might just be thinking, okay, heard this before. But I think there's something deeper. This speech, even though it contains truth about God's greatness, it's fundamentally lacking grace, compassion. It's truth delivered without any real empathy for Job's situation. And when you do that, when you deliver theology like a hammer blow to someone who's already down, it just wounds them further. It's kind of the first layer of ancient wisdom we see here. This idea that theology, even correct theology, can be twisted, weaponized, used to shut people down instead of building them up.
Mm. Weaponized truth. That's a powerful concept. Yeah. It makes you think. Okay, so beyond just understanding Bildad's argument and his maybe flawed delivery,
What
are the deeper, timeless insights embedded in this short chapter? What's the ancient wisdom we can really pull out and, you know, grapple with?
Right. Well, the first big one, which Bildad actually gets right, is about God's majesty being beyond comprehension. Job 25 really underscores that God's glory isn't just big. It makes even the cosmos look, well, dim. His power establishes order and demands reverence. It forces us to accept that our human minds just can't fully grasp God's sheer scale.
Okay, so starting with that sense of awe, that incomprehensible greatness, and the natural response to that then must be humility.
Exactly. That's the second insight. Human humility is appropriate. Bildad's big question, how then can man be justified with God? It's timeless for a reason. It confronts us with the reality that, yeah, even the very best of us, we fall short of God's perfect standard. It's a question that forces an honest look at our own limitations. But then, and this is where Bildad tripped up, we get the crucial wisdom about how we handle that truth. It's the danger of truth without compassion. Like we said, Bildad spoke truths about God's greatness, but he used them almost like a weapon against Job. Theology without real empathy, it often does more damage than good. That's a huge lesson for anyone talking about faith, especially to someone hurting.
Yeah, that delivery, that heart behind the words, it really matters, doesn't it? So how do we avoid that trap? How should we respond to God's holiness then?
Well, that leads to the fourth piece of ancient wisdom here. True fear of the Lord inspires reverence, not despair. Recognizing God's holiness, his power, that's essential wisdom. It's seeing reality. But if that recognition turns into self-loathing or this feeling of complete hopelessness, like I'm just a worm, there's no point, then we've missed God's heart. God's holiness should lead us to humble awe, to worship, not to crippling despair. It's reverence, not resignation.
Okay, that makes sense. It's amazing how relevant these ancient conversations still feel. So let's pivot now. How do these insights from Job 25 actually play out for us today? How can they genuinely encourage obedience and, you know, strengthen our faith right now? What are the modern applications?
Great question. I think the first and maybe most important application is the need to hold God's greatness and his grace together. Yes, God is holy, immensely powerful, beyond our full understanding, absolutely. But he's also incredibly merciful, full of grace. Our faith today, it needs to avoid those extremes, right? Either seeing God as this like distant cosmic judge demanding impossible perfection, or swinging the other way to just a lenient buddy who doesn't really care about holiness. Finding that balance, holding that tension, God's awesome holiness and his inviting grace, that's key for a healthy, obedient faith. When you grasp that his holiness calls you to live righteously and his grace is what makes that possible and even inviting, that really strengthens your faith. It paints a fuller picture of God. It encourages obedience, not just out of fear, but out of love and genuine awe for who he is.
That balance feels so crucial, but also honestly pretty difficult to maintain day to day. What's the risk if we lean too far one way?
Well, if you lean too hard into just the greatness and holiness, you risk ending up like Bildad, potentially judgmental, lacking compassion, maybe even falling into despair yourself. But if you lean too hard into only grace without reverence for his holiness, you risk cheapening grace, maybe becoming complacent, and losing that transformative call to be more like him. It's about seeing them woven together.
Right. Intertwined. Okay. And the second application connects back to Bildad's mistake.
Exactly. It's about how we interact with others. Speak truth with empathy. Bildad's failure is a huge caution sign for us. When we talk to people, especially those who are suffering, are we using truth to build them up or even unintentionally to shut them down? We're called to speak life, offer encouragement, show compassion. That reflects God's own character. That kind of empathetic interaction is a form of Christ-like obedience.
Yeah, I can think of times when maybe my words didn't land with the compassion I intended. It's a constant check. And this next point about everyone falling short, that sounds like it could foster real community.
It absolutely should. The third application is recognizing that we all fall short, and that levels the playing field. Bildad was right that humans aren't inherently pure before God. But the implication isn't just about Job, it's about everyone. None of us has moral high ground. Realizing this should crush our tendency to judge others. It reminds us that every single one of us, without exception, needs forgiveness. We all rely on God's grace. Understanding our shared need deepens our dependence on God, strengthens faith in his provision, and cultivates an obedience that comes from gratitude, not superiority. We're all in the same boat, needing his help.
That perspective is huge. And it connects to the last point, right? Because if we're all imperfect, even worms in Bildad's harsh terms, how do we avoid just feeling worthless?
Right, that's the danger. And it leads to the final crucial application. True humility doesn't mean self-hatred. Yes, seeing God's holiness reveals our flaws, but a healthy understanding leads to awe, to reverence, not to shame or crippling self-loathing. Bildad's warm language, taken the wrong way, could lead there. But God doesn't just want us groveling. He invites us into relationship. Understanding this fosters a more vibrant, confident faith. Obedience flows not from fear or inadequacy, but from love and reverence for this immense God who still chooses to connect with us. It strengthens faith by showing God is approachable, that he values us despite the vast difference between his majesty and our smallness. He extends grace.
So bringing it all together, Job 25, this short ancient exchange, it really holds up a mirror to God's incredible power and our humble place in the grand scheme.
Mm-hmm.
But the crucial takeaway maybe is that this profound truth needs to be wrapped in grace and empathy, both for how we see ourselves and how we treat others.
That sums it up perfectly. And if you wanted like a one-sentence takeaway, maybe it's this. True reverence for God leads to humility, not despair, and reminds us that even in our smallness, we are seen and loved by a holy God.
That's powerful. Definitely something to hold on to. So for you listening, considering this balance, God's immense, awe-inspiring power on one side and his boundless mercy and grace on the other, how do you see that tension shaping your own daily walk with him? How does it inspire your obedience? Something to think about this week.